Welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark A. Bell. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
Good.
You know, this poem today, we're going to start with a little bit of a biology lesson about a new group of drugs. The drugs are abbreviated PKSK9, and you'll see in a moment why that's a preferable term, even though it's a little bit awkward as well. PCSK9 is referred to as a pro-protein convertase subtile isokinase 9. What does all that mean? It's a serine protease produced predominantly in the liver, and it leads to the degradation of hepatocyte LDL receptors and increased LDL levels. So the thinking is that therapies that lower circulating PCSK9 levels will significantly lower LDL levels, meaning that this is a drug category that may be very effective at dealing with a cholesterol, particularly in cholesterol that doesn't respond to the normal statins. The category of lipid-lowering therapy is looking like it may be promising in a range of clinical situations, but it will surprise no listener that it's going to be very, very expensive. The drugs, the first drug, I think, has just been approved recently. Is that right, Mark?
That's correct.
And the estimates are that it's going to be in the sort of $6,000 range, and Mark will tell us a little bit more, but it doesn't involve a pill. It looks like it's going to involve some injection, and anyways, it's going to be complicated, but it may have some enormous benefits. So these monoclonal antibodies that inhibit PCSK9, often referred to as anti-PCSK9 antibodies, reduce LDL in a dose-dependent manner, thought to be as much as 70%. Now, compared to other agents that have been used for lipid lowering, these agents appear to produce substantial clinical benefits, and they seem to reduce all-cause mortality. So these antibodies appear to result in additional reductions in risk, even in patients who are already on intensive or maximal statin therapy. So Mark's found a poem for us. It's from the New England Journal of Medicine, fairly recently, 2015, published in volume 372. It starts in the paper edition on page 1489, and it asks this question. Is alirocumab, which is a PCSK9 inhibitor, is it safe and effective for the prevention of cardiovascular events in high-risk patients who are taking maximum tolerated doses of a statin? So that was a lot of information, Mark, but help us to understand a little bit more about the benefits and risks and when we might think about using these drugs.
Yeah, this is a huge, huge issue. We're going to spend a little more time on this one than our usual podcast, so I apologize in advance to listeners. This is just so big, and there were two big studies that came out. One was the Osler trial, one was the Odyssey trial, and they released some early results of those trials in the New England Journal of Medicine back in this was, I think, late April. And this has been making its way through the FDA approval process. They were just approved, I think, yesterday by the FDA. And we're doing this recording here, in July. And the cost is actually going to be, and I'm going to have to correct you on two things. One is the cost is actually going to be $14,000 a year is what they priced it at, not six.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, the earlier reports were it was going to be 6 to 8. It's actually 14. The other, so over $1,000 a month. The other is that while they've been making it sound as if it reduces every bad possible thing, there's actually no data on all-cause mortality or even cardiovascular mortality, but we'll dig into that a little bit. So there were two studies. The Odyssey long-term study was designed to look at the safety of the drug, and there's a much larger Odyssey outcome study that's underway, which they haven't reported the results yet, and that's the one that's supposed to look at efficacy. So the Odyssey long-term, when they had about 18-month results, they analyzed the data and said, hey, we've got some positive clinical findings here. Let's go forward. And they were going to actually not seek FDA approval for a while, but when the Odyssey long-term study, the harm study, came in and also showed some clinical benefit, that's when they went for approval. So basically, you know, I think reading between the lines here, the Odyssey long-term trial was designed to look at harms, was not powered for efficacy, and they didn't actually pre-specify any composite outcomes. Normally, you like to have them say ahead of time, here's what our target is, here's what we're looking for. They did pre-specify that they were going to look at fatal events, non-fatal MI, stroke, mortality, things like that. They didn't say what kind of a composite they were going to use. And you can imagine if they wouldn't have found any kind of a clinical benefit, they would have said, well, it was inadequately powered. But since they did, they cobbled together their own composite outcome, which is kind of cheating. It's post hoc coming up with what looks like the most favorable composite outcome. So who did they include? These were patients who were at very high risk of heart disease, familial hypercholesterolemias. So those folks typically have LDLs 180 and above, known coronary disease, known other vascular disease. So not primary prevention. These were very high risk. LDL was greater than 70, and I think the mean was 122, despite maximum tolerated dose of a statin. So again, this wasn't being used instead of a statin. It was, they're already on a statin, they're on the maximum dose, we're still not getting them as low as we want based on the older ATP guidelines. They had a total of 2,300 patients. Two-thirds got the alirocumab, 1 milligram, given subcutaneously every 2 weeks. The other third got a matching placebo, and they followed them for up to 78 weeks. So,
Mark, let me interrupt for one sec. So were both groups continued on the statins?
Yes.
Okay. So they got a placebo in addition to the statins, or they got the drug in addition to the statins?
Correct.
Got it. Okay.
Study was done in 320 centers in 27 countries. So the average center only recruited about 7 patients, and that kind of worries you in terms of adhering to the study protocol. Mm-hmm. You know, you like to see fewer centers, more patients per center, so they kind of know what they're doing and don't screw up. But in any case, that being what it may, the mean age of patients was about 60 years. About two-thirds were men, 93% were white. Two-thirds had coronary heart disease. So let's talk about the harms first. The pooled dropout rate is what we look for as the best measure of the sort of tolerability of a drug, and that was about 4% higher in the alirocumab group, so about 28% dropped out versus 24% in the placebo group. So fairly high dropout rates, higher in the alirocumab group, number needed to harm about 27. Myalgias, we know about those from statins, more common also with these drugs, 5.5% versus about 3%, number needed to harm about 40. Another thing that's really, I think, they tried to minimize, but if you look at this study and the other study that was published at the same time, in both studies there was an increase in neurocognitive symptoms such as amnesia, memory impairment, confusional states, 1.2 versus 0.5%. In the other study, it was 0.9 versus 0.3%. Separately, they weren't statistically significant. Put them together, which I did in a little sort of mini meta-analysis, they were. So there does appear to be some, you know, which is a pretty important harm of these drugs. Probably, you know, we know that lipids are important in brains. And there's always been some concerns about driving lipids way really, really low. A lot of these folks got down to LDL levels of 50 or so. Would that have neurocognitive effects? It appears that it does. Again, the absolute number needed to harm is somewhere in the 100-ish range, but still not, or 100 to 200 range. But these are, you know, pretty major bad outcomes. So what about the good things? LDL levels were reduced by 61% compared to 1% in the placebo group. So it works. It lowers your LDL really well. Then the authors said, okay, we have these clinical outcome data. Let's come up with a composite outcome. Okay, let's come up with a all bad things outcome. And they came up with a composite of death from coronary heart disease, death from unknown cause, non-fatal MI, ischemic stroke, or unstable angina requiring hospitalization. So that's a pretty broad range of outcomes to lump together. When they lumped that all together, there was a benefit in the treatment group. Number needed to treat was 63 over 18 months. So it's a 1.7 versus a 3.3% difference. Now, if you're making elarocumab and a real advocate for it, you're going to say there was a 50% reduction in cardiovascular mm-hmm. events. If you are a clinical epidemiologist like us and a physician who cares about getting this right, it's a 1.6% absolute reduction. And if you drill down a little bit, it was driven mostly, almost entirely, by a reduction in the risk of non-fatal MI. It was not driven by a reduction. There was no difference in strokes, unstable angina, deaths, cardiovascular deaths, or any of that. It was only non-fatal MI, which is what we've seen in other hyperlipidemia statin type trials that's really the driver of the benefit. We've also seen that in the aspirin trials, that really most of the aspirin benefit is in the non-fatal MI group. Not that I want a non-fatal MI, but it's a lot better than a fatal MI. It's a lot better than a stroke. So I think we have to keep in mind that really the benefit that they saw here was about non-fatal MI, not any of the other outcomes they lumped in. Heart failure requiring hospitalization, there was no difference. Ischemia driven coronary revascularization, no difference. When you combined all of the pre-specified outcomes, so they sort of cherry picked, but if you took all of their pre-specified outcomes through in the heart failure, through in everything, there was no significant difference between groups, 4.6 versus 5.1%. So, this is, people may want to listen to this again. There's a lot here. And I think the bottom line is that we have some preliminary evidence that in a carefully selected group of folks who were on maximum statins, who are super high risk, that there's a modest benefit in terms of preventing or reducing the likelihood of non-fatal MI. There's a risk here of neurocognitive impairment, number needed to harm around 150 or so, and the cost is incredibly high, and it's an inconvenient thing that you need injections for.
It serves
as
a
sorry it's so long, but
it's also an important reminder to all of us sort of how these drug trials are done. I mean, the two things that sort of stand out to me is why, if you had 320 centers in 27 countries, how could us? I mean, our Department of Cardiology, for example, we would only get 7 patients? I mean, we must have lots of patients who are resistant or, you know, suboptimally treated with statins. Why so few patients per center?
I don't know. Yeah. Honestly, don't know. I mean, they have these networks that are set up, and it's quicker to recruit 10 or 15 in a center each over a 1 to 2 month period than to use 5 centers and take 2 years.
I
assume that's part of it. I'm assuming that's part of it. You'll have to ask them.
Yeah, no, it's worrisome. And the other thing that sort of jumped out at me, you were talking about the pool dropout rate, and you were saying that, you know, there is a little bit of difference, 4% difference. Mm-hmm. But it seemed to me that if one group was taking a placebo and the statins, why is their dropout rate 25%? It was 28% in the group that was taking the active med, but 25% seems pretty high.
I agree, and I couldn't understand that. I mean, I can speculate that maybe, you know, there is kind of an expectation bias that people expect to have muscle aches, and this is given to a group that has lots of muscle aches anyway, and they might associate, oh gosh, I woke up with a low back pain, it must be that drug, and I know they cause those problems, so I'm going to stop it. I don't know, it might have been higher because it's an injection every 2 weeks and they just don't want to deal with the injection every 2 weeks too. So that could have led to some dropouts. And again, you've got 27 countries, there may be issues around adherence when you have to come into the medical center every 2 weeks. In some places that we maybe wouldn't have in, you know, Sacramento or Athens.
Yeah. It gives us some food for thought. There are some real risks. The benefits, it seems to me, are mostly, as you suggest, around the surrogate marker of LDL. When you look at the mm-hmm. clinical stuff, as you're saying, it really is the non-fatal MIs where we see the big difference. But anyways, a very, very nice job of summarizing that for us, Mark. Thanks, and we'll talk with you again next week.
All right. Sounds good.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.